Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast presented by VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Coming up on the show, the Bear, Chris Felica, will join us. We'll do some college football, NFL, baseball, tennis. The Bear is fresh off his vacation, and we will touch on a bunch of things with the Bear as we get closer and closer to football. This time next week, be reacting to games that actually count. Week zero in college football is coming up, so I'll get Bear's thoughts on those games. And much, much more. The baseball races, too, getting exciting. Heading into play Sunday. Yanks cut it to 3 with Tampa. Mariners, some big wins Friday. Walk off again on Saturday. And they had a game Saturday. Down 2 runs, 2 out, nobody on. Double, single, walk off, 2-run homer. So maybe Seattle gets back in the mix. Keep waiting for them to kind of get going. Philly has made things interesting in the NL East. So we got some good races here. Coming down the stretch in baseball, obviously the wild card races, especially in the American League, extremely intriguing and just not that many teams really out of it. A wild card race in the American League. So we'll talk to Bear in a second. But first, just some takeaways. NFL preseason, I always say, love it when it's back. You get the first couple nights where you get a bunch of games, multiple games on at the same time. And then by the time you get to week 2, week 3, it's like, all right, let's get ready for the real thing. Let's get ready for the regular season. I'm pretty much at that point. But some takeaways from this weekend. First off, let's start Thursday. I had recorded the pod. DeMeco Ryans, look, I love the Texans defense. Everyone likes them. You know, it's going to be kind of a trendy Super Bowl. Not a sleeper, but mini sleeper. We'll see if Stroud can bounce back. Was terrible in the playoffs. He's had some good years. He's certainly been up and down. The Texans had a chance to beat the Raiders. And they had a huge lead in the game. Anyway, it's a 4-point game. 2nd and 1. The Texans win the game with a first down. They can run out the clock. They get stuffed on 2nd and 1. They lose a yard on 3rd and 1. It's 4th and 2 or 3, and they decide to punt in plus territory. So to me, and they don't even do the thing where they try to fake go out, you know, get you to jump off sides and try to, you know, get you to jump and get the free 5 yards and win the game that way and even take the delay of game. To me, DeRyans is so shaky with the game management, the clock management, ultra conservative. Even though it's the preseason, who cares about the results? That's a window into, you know, just the lack of execution late in the game and just the lack of strategy from Houston. And in a big spot, that could come back to bite him. I thought that was a really telling mistake from Ryans on Thursday. An ultra conservative move. What happens? Punts the ball back. They lose. And just the whole process, the whole thought process there, to me, was flawed. The other one that's been talked about a lot, if you're the Browns, I don't know how you go on with Watson. It's been a disaster. It hasn't worked. And actually, at the time, you know what? These quarterbacks, I know this is a Vikings fan and plenty of these, you know, Jets, Dolphins, whatever team you root for, it's hard to get these quarterbacks. It's hard to get these guys that are, you know, top 10 quarterbacks in the prime of their career. Watson looked to be one of those guys. Remember in 2019, won a playoff game. It was an overtime. And then was up 24-0. The Texans were in Kansas City. And the Titans had won. It was going to be a Texans-Titans AFC title game. The Texans would have had home field advantage and been favored to go to a Super Bowl. And Watson was in his 3rd or 4th year. He was good right away. He looked like a legit player. Then everything with the personal stuff got, you know, went off track. He was suspended for 2020. He has not been good in 6 years now. He's coming off 2 Achilles injuries. And now he's getting into it with the fans saying, hey, it's disrespectful. You boo me. He was awful in the game on Saturday, the preseason game. 5 of 11, 30 yards. It's time. I don't know from a cap standpoint if it makes sense to cut him, if you can cut him. But you could just do basically what Houston did and say, hey, go away. We'll just leave you at home. We'll put you on whatever, the physically unable to perform list, whatever the case is. And Watson, from a betting standpoint, was like a minus 700 favorite to be the starter week 1. And I was of the belief of the opinion, you know what? Just try to get, even if there's a 5-10% chance that he's got something left, might as well just go down swinging and see if he's got anything. You're not going anywhere anyway. And then turn it over to Sanders. I'm not sure that's the case anymore. I think you might be at the point where just open up the windows, let in some fresh air, get rid of Watson and kind of move on and just don't have him be around the team. The fan base likes Sanders anyway. You know him from college. You know him from Dion. Maybe there's a small chance, you know, Sanders pops. Probably not. And you're probably going to be picking, I would think, with a decent pick next year. But I actually like the rest of that roster. And, you know, the me and Drew did take on the Sunday show on VSiN on Sunday, and he put it well, and I agree with his take. The 2-52, the 2-53 on Cleveland's not bad. The skill guys, you know, you got some young players, always pretty good on defense. There's pieces you like there. Even though they traded Myles Garrett, they got a player back in Jared Verse that, you know, has a lot of ability. It's just that you probably got, you know, one of the, if not the worst, the bottom three quarterback situation in the league. Might as well just go with the younger guy and get rid of Watson. I think that is possible, if not likely, going forward. So that's another one. Cleveland, by the way, is plus 7.5 week one against Jacksonville. That's always a tricky week one. It's always tricky for Survivor. I would look towards taking Cleveland plus the points just because anything over a touchdown week one, it's just, that's a lot of points. That's really, I don't like laying points in general, but laying, you know, essentially two scores and doing it in week one is dicey. Cleveland 5.5 win total. There's always that team, it seems, comes out of nowhere. You know, last year it was the Panthers and the Bears came out of nowhere. They both won divisions. They both had, you know, long odds. There usually is a team that you just don't expect, whether it's the Browns, the Jets. You figure just law of averages, the way the NFL works, you're going to have one of those teams. I just don't know. And I thought the Browns had some kind of characteristics of a team that could come out of nowhere. But with this whole Watson mess, it's hard to feel good about that. But that's why these teams come out of nowhere, because they have the low expectations. You got to have low expectations to come out of nowhere. So maybe it's the Jets who are a little bit better. Maybe it's the Browns who are a little bit better. But this Watson thing is just a disaster. And I think, and as most people seem to think, it's time to move on. I mean, he's taking out his earrings, talking about how, you know, he's not being appreciated, not being respected at the podium. It's just, it was a bad look all the way around. I mean, nobody wants him around. The fans don't like him. He doesn't like the fans. It's an untenable situation, I would say, going forward. And he can't play anymore. You know what? People would forgive and forget if he was still good. He just hasn't been good, and he hasn't been good in a long time. So we'll see what Cleveland decides to do there. One of the last things, and by the way, another takeaway, I watched some of the Commanders-Lions game. Jaden Daniels, whew, I know it was only a few plays. He got absolutely rocked a few times. Mariota, the backup, is already hurt. Tunsil, the big-time offensive lineman, is hurt. Daniels is injury-prone. That could be something to watch, where he's thin, he's injury-prone. If he's getting hit like that, he's going to be back, you know, missing games like he was last year and even his rookie year. So that was one that was a takeaway and a bit of a red flag watching Washington and Detroit Saturday afternoon. The other thing on this, too, before we get to the Bear, and we'll do some NFL, some baseball, a lot of everything with the Bear. Butker from the Chiefs makes a 70-yard field goal on Saturday. I'm tired of the 70-yard field goal kicks. It's too easy to score. It's too cheap to score. I don't know how you mitigate it. Could you make the goalposts more narrow? Could you make it be, if you miss the field goal, you lose like 20 yards of field position, so it puts a little more pressure on the kicker? There's a little bit more of a downside to missing. But watching these guys, I mean, you basically, you know, you get the kickoff and you start at whatever, the 30 or the 35. You get one first down and you can kick a field goal basically from midfield. It's just too cheap. It's too easy. I know some people may like it. I think actually the consensus is, though, what my thinking is, and it's too much. It's almost like the pitchers with velocity. The kickers can kick from so far now. It's almost like the steroid era, or the pitchers with velocity where everyone throws 100. These kickers can all kick from 65, 70. And not only did Butker make it, I think it was officially 69. And not only did he make it, went right down the middle, it hit the net. And the net was a good 4 or 5 yards behind the goalpost. I mean, that would have been good for 75. I mean, what point do we get to where it's just, I don't know. I mean, it's fair. It's not like it's unfair, because it's the same for everybody. But just as a fan of the sport, I'm a little over it. I don't know, again, what can be done about it, or if other people feel the same way. It just feels like it's just too cheap. And it used to be, wow, anything over like, you know, 40, 45 on grass was kind of a difficult kick. 50 was really hard. 60 was unheard of. Now, I mean, you're getting to the point where you just, you know what, you take the kickoff, you get 8 yards, and you kick the field goal no matter where you get the ball. It's just too easy. It's just too easy. But those are some takeaways. NFL preseason, Watson, time for Cleveland to move on. Daniels have a little concern with Washington, their inability to protect him and him taking those big hits. D'Amico Ryans, I thought, did a bad job Thursday night, not closing that game out. And that game landed. That game was bouncing around spread-wise. 1, 1.5, 2, 2.5. And the Raiders end up winning the game by 2. I think there was points where you could have gotten Texans plus 2.5. So that was one where you could have middled it if you had the foresight and just kind of got ahead of the line movement either way. But sooner or later, sooner rather than later, I should say, the real thing will be back. with Patriots and Seahawks that Wednesday night, and then you get the Thursday night Rams and 49ers. Nothing on Friday this year. I know the past couple of years we've had that Friday night game, kind of got used to that. Nothing on Friday, Saturday college, and then Sunday the 13th, the first NFL Sunday. So it's coming. It's coming, starting with week zero coming up this week, and we'll get week zero thoughts with the Bear, Chris Felica. That is next. This Should Have Bet More podcast. All right, Should Have Bet More podcast. We are back, and he is back. Back from vacation from Fox Sports. Big Noon Kickoff Bear Bets podcast. It is Chris Felica. Bear, welcome back. I always say this, you never get too old for that back-to-school feeling, which, all right, party time is over, play time is over, it's time to get back to work. Do you have that feeling? And welcome back. How was vacation?
The vacation was great. I would highly suggest, if you have the opportunity to get to the Pacific Northwest and Alaska to do it. Dawes Glacier was amazing, and to see it kind of calve and crack a little bit, and it was pretty wild to see in person. Vancouver is a beautiful, beautiful place. Got some great orca whale sightings off the in the Pacific there. It was fantastic. But yes, I do have that little nervous energy going now with the back to school feeling. The college football is here. But I before we get going too far, yeah, I do want to give you and Matt Eumanns a shout prior to my vacation. I know you guys were previewing the Romero Lopez fight, and the interview that you guys did with Raleigh Romero was really telling. And I came away from that interview with the questions you asked and the reacts, just kind of feeling that Lopez was the right side in that fight. So I did get down on Lopez to win. And sure enough, on the way home from the airport last night, following along on the various apps, you could follow along the round by round. And it seemed like Lopez did win that fight pretty comfortably, despite what ultimately the judges said.
Yeah, and Romero, and I didn't watch this fight, but apparently Romero thought he won and kind of milked the clock, and then he didn't win. And if you listen to the interview, I'll just, you know what, that probably doesn't surprise you to hear that. So that was a fun one. Let's I'll start college football this time next week. Is it going to be, wow, well, it's, you know, we're writing Belichick's obituary at North Carolina. Time is running out. He's not going to make it till the end of the year. He's not going to be back for year three. Or is it going to be, you know what, Belichick's team may be a little better than we thought. They're competitive against TCU. They either cover, they pull off an upset. Do you have any feel here with TCU now laying 7.5 to North Carolina? I know TCU's got some of their issues on their own now.
Yeah, I guess they got some suspensions and some infighting going on. I think it's the former. I think it's a question of, oh my God, North Carolina. I don't think they're going to lose in the fashion that they did last year to TCU, but I do think it's a, ooh, they did not look great. They lost again by a comfortable win for TCU, and I think it's going to be a question of us having the conversation as the year goes on. How many games ultimately does this team win this year? And I know I am on the under 4.5. It's some nice plus money, so we'll see ultimately what way that goes. But I'm feeling like my preseason thoughts of them is probably the way it's ultimately gonna go.
NC State, Virginia, do you have any feel for that game? Virginia laying 5.5, some sixes out there, or anything else in week zero for that matter?
It seems like it's a little bit high, but I think if you look at Virginia, I think people are just automatically expecting them to just kind of fall flat on their face after just winning every close game imaginable in some ridiculous ways last year. But they did bring in a bunch of, like, maybe not headline guys, but experienced guys, good, just a good, like, big name program guys, just kind of fill in the gap. So I'm not sure Virginia's going to fall ultimately, but flat back down. I would probably take a look at the over in this game, and I hate betting overs. But I think if you look at the offense that Virginia's going to have, along with C.J. Bailey and what NC State has coming back there, feels like it's a higher scoring game. But if you can get some sixes and 6.5s out there, that does feel like NC State might be the right side there.
Do those contests, the college football, does that stuff start this week, or does it start until week one?
No, week one is when the first full week. Because there are only a few games this Saturday, and you really can't do that. But, you know, week one up and going, the the Super Bowl college contest out there, the Splash Sports contest that I've got going up there. I pick seven games a week. That is week one as well. And I would imagine Last Man Standing and all those other deals will be week one as well.
Anything on these two, Hawaii and Stanford? Stanford laying 5.5, UNLV laying 5.5 against Memphis. Any thought there? Dogs live. Everyone seems to like Stanford, thinks they get revenge from the game last year, but you tell me if you have any thought on either of those.
I think Stanford is still trying to – I've done a little bit of work on Stanford just because that's Miami's season opener, and obviously the guys in my Miami group chat are all dialed into that. I think they certainly have a little bit of work still to do. I would be inclined to lay the points with UNLV. I think Memphis is a team that is on the down. Ryan Silverfield took a bunch of guys with him to Arkansas. They didn't have a very good defense last year. I think UNLV, I think with Dan Mullen, obviously it's a guy who knows how to win. If Jackson Arnold is going to reach the level and the expectation that people had for him coming into college, I would expect him to do it at a place like UNLV. 5.5, I would lay the points there with UNLV, expecting them to try and get a kind of a statement type win for the group of six.
I know you've done a lot of college football content between podcasts and just, you know, everything you do. Anything, I guess I'll ask it this way, anything you feel differently about? You know, you've been away for a couple weeks where, man, I predicted this, but now I don't feel good about it. Any sort of last thoughts, anything that sort of changed here over the last couple weeks or month or so?
Let me try and run down. I think maybe the Oklahoma stance. Like I was like, how's Oklahoma going to run through this schedule? But I think if you look at the Oklahoma defense, I think it's going to be obviously be a great unit. And I think as well, the offensive line was young last year. It should be better. The running back should be better. You talk to some people and Nagy and Venables, Oklahoma must feel pretty comfortable with the state of their program to be given Venables that extension prior to the year. Oklahoma probably would be the one team that I don't necessarily think is destined for 8-4, 7-5, that like I did. And maybe LSU as well. I was a dead under on LSU as well. But I think so if you look at the SEC, so many of these teams are like right there with each other. It's just a big cluster, I think, right behind the obvious teams at the top. So I think I would probably be a little bit higher on Oklahoma than I was initially, and probably a little bit higher on LSU than I was initially as well.
I am guilty of, I see these headlines about the drama with college football of like, you know, these guys are in training camp in the NFL. They want to be cut so they can go back to college. I don't know. Is there anything to that from a handicapping standpoint? Do you think this makes a difference where these guys can go back to college? What's your takeaway from all this?
Yes, I absolutely do. Because you're looking at guys that were good enough to make it at this stage of an NFL camp. And if you look at certainly some of the position players that we're talking about, like a big tight end, Wright, who was at Ole Miss last year, and now he's in Browns camp. And if he were to go to, I'm just going to use my team, like Miami, a team that really needs a tight end, or if he were to go play for his former college coach, Lane Kiffin at LSU, who knows how to use him, that's a massive difference. You look at a Clyburn, the other defensive end, who I think was also in Browns camp, a team, and I'm just using, again, this conversation because I know Miami inside and out, like if they were a little thin potentially on the defense, on losing Bain and Mesidor, and maybe they were looking to bolster their defensive ends, like you could bring him in. So it's a disaster. It's not what the spirit of the rule and the NIL, this is all pay for play. NIL is Caitlin Clark is the face of Iowa college women's college basketball, NCAA, and she deserves a piece of the pie for that. It's CJ Carr is the face of Notre Dame and patches or whatever. Like he deserves a piece of that. It's not the backup defensive end at whatever the university. Oh, we got to pay him. It's two completely different issues. And now I am not for the government getting involved and setting salary caps and such, but something needs to be done. I think ultimately some type of collective bargaining will be the resolution here.
baseball. We're recording this as the Sunday games are going here, but we've got some races. The Yankees, don't look now, only three games out heading into Sunday. Tampa has not played well. The AL West has been tight. Mariners, you know, big win on Friday and then a crazy win. I don't know if you saw this on Saturday. Two out, nobody on, down two runs. Double, single, walk-off homer. Maybe that gets them going. Then the NL East, the Phillies somehow only three games behind the Braves. Anything worth a bet? Any of these three teams that are not in first place right now, you think end up catching the division leader and actually winning it?
I don't think the Yankees will, just because the number of injuries that they have. I think that's a lot to. I know we say there's a long runway to go, 30 games or whatever, but it still feels like a big ask for a Yankees team that can't score very many runs at all. And now you lose Weathers as well. Who knows when Fried is coming back? So I don't see the Yankees getting there. I think the White Sox are safe in the Central. I don't think the Astros are going to hang on in the West. I don't know whether that's going to be Texas or if ultimately Seattle, who most people have thought at the start of the year was the best team in that division, and maybe their pitching finally puts it all together and they get hot. I guess Seattle would probably be the play there. The Phillies have obviously been white hot and probably should have bought, being that I had a big Brace bet from earlier in the year. I probably should have.
Oh, you and me both,
Phillies
buddy.
And, yep. I should have bought some Phillies at a bigger price there with the opportunity. But I think if there were one bet to be made, I would probably bet Seattle.
Yeah, plus 210. I would agree with that. And Cade Anderson, the highly touted prospect, called up. You know, the walk-off wins on Friday and Saturday, if anything's going to get them going. They got the pitching, maybe that, you know, the walk-off wins get them going.
That I'm looking for is at the other end. I'm living and dying every day with the Rockies, hoping the Rockies ultimately win and get out of that logjam for the worst record. The Royals winning seven in a row out of nowhere is stuck a dagger in my heart. But still got a great price on the Giants, got a good price on the Angels, and use some free play on the A's. So I'm in a good spot there if we can get the Rockies out of that bottom feeder bunch.
Yeah, and it's funny. The Royals, 17 games under 500 entering play Sunday, only 7.5 games out. Now, they're not going to make the playoffs, but that just shows you everything you need to know about the American League, that they're 57 and 74 and 7.5 out. It's amazing. And, you know, I've talked about this before. It was fine with the two wild cards. The three division winners would get in. The fourth seed would be a wild card. The fifth seed would be a wild card. They play the one-game playoff, yep, and we get rid of one of them. Now, we all watch these extra games in the two out of three series in the weekday afternoons are fun, and nobody's going to not watch them. Same thing with, you know, college football playoff expanding. It's just there's too many teams in the playoff, aren't there?
Yes. Although I do think you can make the case, and you can say in the past how teams like the Diamondbacks have gotten to the World Series, yeah, and wild cards have done well there. And I think if you look at the divisions this year, like you got the Cubs and the Phillies, both either of those teams could get to the World Series. Yankees, Red Sox obviously get the World Series, but the third team, I think, is what we're looking at here. Like, I know the Padres have gotten hot, but can you really see the Padres getting there? I can't. And then you're looking at that glut of garbage below 500 from the AL. I think there's one too many. Two wild cards, I think, is enough.
Yep, I would agree. Any awards bets you would make, or you think everything's pretty much spoken for now?
I would think everything's, like, I mean, I just don't know what like, are you willing to take a shorter price on Sal Stewart for an Rookie of the Year? Are you willing to take the price, whatever? It's going to be Schlittler or Cease. It's going to be Stewart or Weatherholt. American League, I guess the AL Manager of the Year, like, that's the toughest one, because you got two guys in Tracy and Venable that are both really qualified and have really good candidacies for those awards. But it looks like the market at least has decided that Venable is the guy with that. And I would think if the White Sox do win that division, he probably will. I guess NL Manager of the Year might be one that you could potentially look at. I know Torey Lovullo has been someone that has gotten a lot of run lately, the Mattingly tickets. And maybe do they have life again if they somehow win the division? I don't know if Walt Weiss, like, if that's the guy, like, people thought the Braves would be Like, it's maybe NL Manager of the Year might be the one where you could potentially take a shot.
Yeah.
Well, have you fooled around with these seed number bets for baseball?
I've looked at it, and that's what I was going to ask you next. Who do you think is the final wild card in the American League? Because, you know, we joke about the Royals being only 7.5 out, a million games under 500. Boy, take your pick. Tigers, who have played terribly here, Orioles, Blue Jays, Rangers, Guardians. If you think the West winner, the Astros falls back, the Mariners. I mean, it's like eight teams in the mix here. Is there one you like more than the next? Is there anyone that's worth a bet? I know you and I like the Orioles coming in, so I've kind of stuck to my guns with that one, and you get like 8-1, but I don't know. You tell me.
Probably the Blue Jays, just because the start of the season that they had was absolutely abysmal, but you still got a guy in Cease who you're going to send out there every fourth, fifth day, who's an anchor of that rotation, and they still got some other pieces in that rotation, despite kind of trading off. I think the Blue Jays would be the team that I would bet. The Rangers, I just can't get a grasp on them. The Guardians, we know they're going the wrong way. Twins, I don't see it. I think ultimately the Mariners could win that division, and you could see the Rangers and the Astros both out of the playoffs. But I think the Blue Jays would be the team that I would bet there.
Anything in the exact is worth a shot? I was thinking about this yesterday, because whoever you think's coming out of the sixth seed, I was talking about this a little the other day with Gil, whoever you think is the sixth seed, man, the path is there. Let's just say it's the Astros. They hang on, even though you and I both think the Mariners are alive. If you're the sixth seed, you get the Astros in round in at 2 out of 3, and then the best out of 5 is possibly or probably the White Sox, where Yankees, Orioles, and it's moved a little bit. Yankees, Orioles, ALCS is 70-1. Play around with whoever you think the sixth seed is, mm-hmm. and kind of get creative with the matchups. But anything from an ALCS matchup standpoint, World Series matchup standpoint, that you think is worth playing around with, and you buy.
I think the White Sox are a little. Just kind of because the predetermination was like the White Sox have been so bad, there's no way they can make that leap and get there. But you look at the rest of the American League, like who's to say the White Sox can't win the American League? I would play around with some White Sox ALCS kind of exactas, and maybe they get hot and too young to know any better or care, and they could be the team that ultimately does get to the World Series and just wheel the White Sox with some NL teams in the World Series.
Boy, what the hell was that number back in March or February? My goodness.
Can't even imagine.
Yeah, and that seems weird to think the White Sox to be playing into October or deep into October, but hey, look at the American League. It's hard to find teams you like. What do you make of the Dodgers? They're vulnerable. They've gotten back on track here. I know the bullpen's been an issue, but do you think they're vulnerable, or is this just, you know what, their little slump is over with? They got Skubal. They got Glass now coming back, Snell's back, Otani's going to pitch, and they're ultimately going to come out of the National League. Would you go Dodgers or Field in the NL?
I think I'd be curious what the price is, but I don't think it's a lock that they get there. And I know we all had that knee-jerk reaction when they got Skubal, but you look at the last couple of years, they were an out away from losing in the World Series last year. A couple of years ago, we've talked about they needed a bullpen game down in the series against the Padres, or they would have been done then. Baseball is completely random, and I think if you look at the teams that you're ultimately dealing with here, the Braves with that rotation can be a problem. The Cubs and their ability to score runs. The Phillies, if you're throwing out Wheelers, Sanchez, and Lizardo, like that could be an issue as well. I don't think it's the Dodgers and everyone else in the NL. I mean, I don't know if that's just the fan and the optimist and hopeful there, but I would take a shot against the Dodgers in the NL.
Yeah, and it's going to be an interesting series. And if the seeds hold up, if it's Cubs-Phillies round one, Cubs got a lot of talent. Phillies have that pitching in a short series. That could be a very good mm-hmm. series. Even the Padres, even though that team is not championship caliber, they don't seem to have a lot of fear of the Dodgers. They played them a lot. They played them tough. And to your point, they were up 2-1 on them a couple years ago with Cease on the mound at home against the bullpen game and couldn't get it home.
And they probably have the best bullpen of all these teams in the playoffs. So, I mean, if they get to the hole, we can shorten at the game and go Mahone and Miller and whoever else that want to trot out there and the very old school Yankees get to the seventh inning and you're in really good shape.
NFL, what is your strongest take? You think this team's going to be way better than other people? You think it's going to be way worse than other people? What's the team you're kind of playing your flag on, if any?
I'm scared to like say it, but like the Colts, I have like problems with the amount of Colts Kool-Aid that I'm drinking. Now, I know the backup quarterback position is a big issue, especially if Daniel Jones is hurt and can't come fully back, but you think he is, and you look at what they were early in the season last year. I know they played some really poor teams, but they were 8-2 to start and winning by, two touchdowns a game, somewhere around there. Then everything got hurt, and the trade for Sauce didn't work, and he ultimately got hurt, and you bring in Phillip Rivers, and I know they got that weird schedule, the London game quirk, where they got to come back and play right away, but I'm not necessarily as there with like the Jaguars and the Texans in that division. I think the Colts at over 8.5, some plus money. I think that's a bet for me. I think they got some weapons on offense, and if Jones can stay healthy, I think this is a team that can certainly win 10 games and win that division.
That was a very D'Amico Ryans-esque loss for the Texans the other night. I know it's preseason, nobody cares, but second and one.
We should care. This is the time of the year where you should be doing things differently from what you would do during the regular season. Experiment with some plays. Have some certain decision making and some thought process that you can apply during the regular season instead of falling into the shell like you normally have.
Second and one, a first down ices the game. They get stuffed. They get stuffed again. It's 4th and 2, and they punt. They don't even think I was flipping around, but I don't even think they did the thing where you come out, pretend you're going to go for it, and try to jump off sides, which, hey, works, you know, 1 out of every 5 or 6 times. It's at least worth a shot. If not, you take the delay of game. He concerns me in a big spot. I know the media loves him. He's done a good job, makes the playoffs. He's won a game, I think, the playoffs the last, yep, 3 years. But, man, we're a little conservative for me.
The other one that I'm – I guess it falls to the AFC East. Is it worth maybe a little flyer on the Bills to miss the playoffs and maybe play the Patriots to win that division? It just seems like the groupthink and the narrative is that all because the schedule has gotten so much tougher for the Patriots that they're going to fall back and they're a dead under. Like, if we think the quarterback is going to take the next leap and be a an MVP type quarterback. And we obviously respect the coaching ability of Vrabel and that staff. Like, should we automatically assume that they're going to just take a step back? Like, the Bills defense couldn't stop the run to save their life. And I know Jimmy Leonard comes in and they should be better, but maybe a little dabble with the Bills to miss, and then maybe playing the Patriots to win that division might be worth a, that's another one of my contrarian type questions that would be the answer, that maybe I'm higher on the Patriots than most and lower on the Bills.
Any chance, you know, we're sitting here in October and it's, wow, the Jets are 4-2. The Jets finally got some turnovers their way. Geno Smith's playing okay. Is there any hope for the Jets to be somewhat competent here in the season?
I think it depends on the quarter. It depends on two things. It depends on Geno Smith. Obviously, the reports are he hasn't been looking great. And then the coaching staff. I haven't heard a ton of respect from a lot of people about this coaching staff. So if you can get something out of them, then maybe. But they've done a really good job in the draft and the offseason the last couple of years. And I think this year is, I don't want to say it's a free roll for Aaron Glenn and the staff, because obviously they don't feel that way. But as a Jets fan, I think it's a free roll. And I'm hoping that they are in a position where they can potentially take one of these quarterbacks up top of the first round next year in the draft with the number of draft picks that they have.
Something I talked about at the open. What do you think the Browns do with Watson? It seems like it's at this point. What's the point?
Why you're not getting any money back? It's clear that the fan base hates him. It's clear he's totally washed. Whether you think Shedeur Sanders is a starter in the NFL or not a starter in the NFL, at this point, you got to find out that way you know where you are next year. But I would just cut Watson, just be done with it. Terrible signing, terrible move, terrible everything, terrible what happened off the field. It's clear that he is. Where are you going this year anyway? What purpose is it, just to like pat yourself on the back? See, we knew after a couple of Achilles injuries and everything, like, we knew he was the guy 6 years later or whatever. I would just be done with it. Like I said, you're not getting the money back. You're not recouping any of it. Cut him, release him. He's clearly not going to play anywhere else. Who the hell else is going to want to put him on the roster? And sink or swim with Shadur. And then people who think Shadur is a starter in the league will either be proven right or wrong.
Yeah, and I don't know enough about the cap to know, like, if you cut him, if there's a penalty. But either way, you could just kind of do what Houston did and send him home and just air the room out. You know what? Yep. It's time to move on. It's bad vibes. And I had a different feeling on it a couple weeks ago where, hey, just even if it's a 5% chance, make sure he's got no football left in him before you move on. I think we're at that point. It's time to move on. We'll finish with this. Tennis. Men's, women's, U.S. Open coming up. People seem to think wide open on both sides. What bets have you made? What bets would you recommend?
Well, a couple of weeks ago, there were the reports out there that Carlos Alcaraz was skipping Cincinnati because of his wrist, and there were word out there about Jannik Sinner going back to Italy to have his knee looked at, and people obviously were there. Oh, it's a scheduled, but anytime you're looking at having a knee, and he hasn't been seen since Wimbledon. So at that point started picking off some numbers on some guys. I think I would be betting against Alcaraz right now. I would not be playing him, certainly a plus 175 or right around there with what the market has him. Having to win seven matches in the New York Heat after not playing a tournament since whenever the hell the last time he played was pre-French Open. So I would be looking to beat him. Again, prices are gone, but I would be taking a long look at a guy like Taylor Fritz, American, who's been to the final of the U.S. Open. Maybe he finally breaks the American Slam drought. I will be taking a look at a guy like Arthur Fils, who is in the final of Cincinnati, a big serve guy. Rafael Hodar is another guy who played really, really well at the French Open, and he seems to be on the cusp, and I think his hardcourt game is getting better. I would say Sasha Zverev, but at 4-1, 4.5-1, his hardcourt season hasn't necessarily been great. So I would look around and I would play either Fritz, Fils, or Hodar on the men's side. And I think the women's side is what is really wide open. Like I think we're going to get a situation like we got at Wimbledon, where we get a completely random final. You look at Aryna Sabalenka, she has not made it past the quarterfinal of like her last seven, like 1000s and slams and major events. So her form is terrible. We'll have to see if Iga Swiatek can keep her good form up. Elena Rybakina has a leg injury, so who knows about that. Can Jessie Pegula maybe finally get there and win her first slam? You could go a lot of different ways in the women's U.S. Open, and I would probably, if you're looking to say Carolina Muhova wins her first, fine, go for it. If you want to say Alexandra Ayala gets hot and wins her slam on hard court, fine, go for it. You want to say Iva Jovic, the young American, she gets hot. Like, I don't have any strong feels on the women's side other than I will be playing against Sabalenka. And I would be looking to go really deep potentially for a winner, just kind of like what we had at Wimbledon when Linda Nuskova won her her first Grand Slam.
Is this your favorite time of the year? How would you rank? And I know it's splitting hairs. Favorite time of the year with U.S. Open, football being back. Then I guess you weigh that versus like October when you have the football and Major League Baseball playoffs. And then, I don't know, March Madness. Is this your favorite time of the year? Is it close? How would you
kind of
power rank it?
This is pretty good. I mean, I love the tennis. And obviously with football coming back, it's great. The other time of the year that I really like as well is when you have Final Four weekend, and then the Masters the following weekend. The Kentucky Derby preps are lining up. Baseball is back as well. You're getting into NBA and NHL playoffs. That April, that month of April is pretty damn good too.
What was the best thing you ate on vacation?
Oh, I had an Alaskan king crab leg in Juneau. That was I'm gonna shame out. Liverpool has evened it up here. I missed the goal while we were having our conversation. But the best thing I had an Alaskan king crab leg. I paid $90 for it. It was so good. It was melting your mouth, like just perfect the way they served it and kind of slit already. That way you didn't cut yourself when you're using the cloth to do it. That was great. And then on the boat on the Seabourn cruise line, they have a dessert where it's like a baked camembert cheese. It's a little ring of camembert cheese, and they bake it and it melts, and they give you a side of like a honey cranberry type mustard.
What's week one for Big Noon Kickoff? Where are you going? Do you know yet?
We're going to Indiana. Obviously, okay. Week one, they're only, right. The only games. I mean, you have the LSU Clemson game, and there's one other game. That's really no. The non-conference games are terrible this year. But to go to Indiana, and they'll celebrate their national title and raise a flag or a banner or whatever else. They play North Texas, so the game isn't great. But we'll be there, and it sure should be good and entertaining. And then the following week, I'm looking forward to. Obviously, the second week of the year is great. You've got Ohio State, Texas, but we're going to be at Oklahoma at Michigan, and that should be a pretty telling game for both teams.
What's the restaurant in when you go to Indiana? What's the restaurant of choice?
I've only been to Bloomington a couple of times. We're going to try a new spot this year. I can't remember the name of the place we went last year. Kind of a little bit, I don't want to say foofies, like it kind of has like a negative connotation, but it's kind of like a small plate, tapas type place.
Okay.
So really good, but why do we need to go there for the third straight year? So we're going to look for somewhere else, and then I'm sure Michigan will wind up being the Chop House, which is a really good steakhouse and some great sides.
Maybe our Michigan fan that we like to follow on Twitter will be there. Who knows?
I wonder. Yeah, Michigan, Oklahoma would be a pretty good game for Michelle to get to.
Yes.
Name. Everybody knows who we're talking about.
Yes. Everybody. By the way, Indiana, when you go there, man, say hi to our national championship. That should have been ours. But I think you mentioned it. The rule starts. What is it? What's your rule in your Miami group chat? Once
September,
the season starts,
September,
it's over.
September 4th. Okay. When toe meets leather, Miami at Stanford, when that happens, the national championship game will never be mentioned again.
All right, Bear. Appreciate the time. Let us know. Bear Betts, Big Noon Kickoff.
Yep.
What else you got going on?
That's it. Bruce and the Bear are going on Fridays. Yeah, Monday, Thursday, Friday. Bear Betts with different hosts, different angles, different whatever else. And then weekly columns. Monday, kind of like my top 10. Look back, look ahead, and then pick column throughout the week. So I mean, I'm assuming wake up Barstool on Friday mornings again. That was fun to do. During the college football season with T-Bob and Mike and Megan and everybody else on that show. So I'm going to get back in doing that on Friday morning as well.
All right. Thanks to the Bear, Chris Felica. Appreciate you guys listening. Rate, review, subscribe. Be back Wednesday. See you then.